You've just joined the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. The views and opinions expressed are strictly those of the host or their guests. Visit us in the interactive chat room at PrepperBroadcasting.com.
Welcome to the Next Generation Show, where we delve deeper into the little things in life that make all the difference in the world. Here we explore the lost art of fatherhood, parenthood, and fundamental preparedness for the world today. I'm your host, Ryan Buford, and I'm here with my young co-host, Master Colin, and today we're broadcasting from the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Thank you for joining us today. There's not a moment to lose, so let's dig right in. First off, a couple of announcements for those of you listening on Blog Talk Radio. We ask that you switch over to PrepperBroadcasting.com, where you'll find the best audio and an amazing chat room experience. I'm in there along with several like-minded listeners, and we'd like you to join us. If you don't have access to a computer at the moment, or if you're not listening online, you do have an opportunity to call in anytime during the live show at 347-202-0228, and then press 1 if you'd like to speak with us live on air. I'm at the controls tonight, so if I see someone in queue that's interested in chiming in, either hit me up on the chat room to make sure that I see it, or be patient so that I can get over to you. We do ask that you keep it PG-13, or at least PG for our listening audience anyway. Just wanted to wish Michael Klein a fond farewell. He was the Reality Check host for over a year on Friday nights here on PrepperBroadcasting.com. He had an amazing run, and we will miss him dearly. He had some great shows and great sense of humor. He brought a lot to the table, and hopefully he's going to be off doing bigger, better things in his time away from Prepper Broadcasting. But with the loss of Michael Klein, we do have a new Friday night show host, Morgan, who's going to be with us from here on out on Friday nights. And I do look forward to hearing her new show. It's going to be on Friday nights. I believe it's going to be the same time slot. So stay tuned for any sort of details or changes around that end. But more than likely, you'll be able to reach her at 9 o'clock on Eastern time. And it'd be 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock on the West Coast. So, and hey, we'd like to hear your feedback, comments, show ideas. So if you'd like, you can reach out to us if you get a chance at Prepper Broadcasting on the Next Generation Show page. We have live shows every weekend on Sunday night, 3 o'clock Pacific time, 6 o'clock Eastern. And you can always email me through the show page or hunt me down on social media if you'd like, Facebook, MeWe. We got Twitter and Instagram, all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in connecting with me on social media, we're there. And Colin's been taking on a lot of the Instagram side of things to make sure we get our prepper projects up and going. So, be sure to check us out on social media, and we'll be happy to have you join the clan so that we can build the show and share what we have, share what we know. So today's topic, we're going to be talking about finding cures for cabin fever. And I wanted to share with the folks out there listening something that I experienced as a young kid. And it was actually more of a exposure to something rather than having experienced it firsthand. When I was young, my brother and I went on one of our last road trips with my mother, and we went to along the Oregon coast. And as part of our stops along the way, we stopped at a place known as Fort Clatsop, and it's near Astoria, Oregon, on the kind of near the Columbia River. And at first, I wasn't quite sure what was going on. It just seemed like another natural park or another national park stop that my mom wanted to drag us to. But it turned out it was actually quite a bit more than that. The story of Fort Clatsop goes way back to the 1800s, early 1800s, and it was a result of the adventures of Lewis and Clark with the Corps of Discovery. The Fort Clatsop was something that they had to create as part of their preparations for making the return trip. For those of you who don't know much about Lewis and Clark or the Corps of Discovery, there's an amazing book out there called Undaunted Courage, and it's by Stephen Ambrose. And what he had done in this book is he had taken some of the original diaries and manuscripts and drawings that were from the Lewis and Clark expedition, and he put them into a comprehensive book that detailed their trip. So essentially what these two men and a small group of, I guess, probably like-minded crazy folks decided to do was they wound up... So I'm going to give you the 5 second, five minute tour real quick of how this worked out. So the Corps of Discovery was a team of guys who were contracted by Thomas Jefferson to find out what exact, like to find a passage to the Pacific Ocean, a safe trip basically. And as part of that, they were exploring the path, but also determining how much land the United States had actually received as a result of the Louisiana Purchase, which was everything pretty much west of the Mississippi River to the Pacific Ocean. Nobody had explored this area from the west before, so they didn't know what it was. But for $75, the United States bought it from France as a result of them needing money to fund a war. And as part of this purchase, they wound up acquiring all this land, and nobody knew how much land it was, you know, what was all there. So Thomas Jefferson sent out the Corps of Discovery, and it was led by Meriwether Lewis and, oh, Clark, what was his name? I'm drawing a blank. Hold on, folks. Well, I'm going to say Meriwether Lewis and Clark. But anyway, so these two guys headed it up. They explored the entire pathway, and they started from the Missouri and made it to the Pacific Ocean, crossed an entire continent from the headwaters of the Missouri, across the Great Plains, over the Rocky Mountains, and along the Columbia River and its tributaries. Now, Fort Clatsop was at the end of the line, and when they got there, they realized that they wouldn't be able to return until winter was over. So they built this fort, Fort Clatsop, near what's now Astoria, Oregon. Now, they've actually... The interesting thing about this particular fort was it was deemed as kind of a prison more than a fort, because they were pretty much trapped there for several months while they waited for the weather to clear so that they could leave and make their return trip. Now, I dropped a link in the chat room that's just a brief wiki summary of Fort Clatsop and some of the things that happened. But I'd like to share with you a passage from Stephen Ambrose's Undaunted Courage, because I wanted to show through kind of what these guys had to endure over those 3 months, some of the things that that they were up against. It wasn't so much that they didn't have enough food, because there was plenty of elk. They were able to hunt all they wanted and you know, dry what they needed for a future trip back, get all the hides and use them for clothing and moccasins and you know, cordage, whatever they needed for their return trip. But something that they didn't really pay as much attention to, or something that they wound up suffering from, was an extreme sense of cabin fever. And what cabin fever is essentially it's a form of depression that's it's stereotypical of wintertime. Meriwether Lewis and William Clark. Thank you, Flying Dutchman and Prepper Son. Appreciate it, Colin. Anyway, so these they had a these 3 months where they were just pretty much stuck. They couldn't go anywhere, and as part of the winter, it was raining pretty much nonstop for I want to say almost 3 months. And keep in mind that these folks hadn't been in contact with anyone from Western civilization except for the folks that they were in their party. So, you know, it was one of the things I wanted to read here was that Stephen Ambrose says, evidently not until he began writing about getting home did Lewis realize how much he missed civilization. He had spent 1801 to 1803 with Thomas Jefferson in the president's house. His daily conversational fare had ranged from practical politics to the nature of man, from zoology to botany, geography to medicine, literature to history, all in the company of the leading cultural, intellectual, scientific, and political figures of the United States, and a few from Europe. For 2 years, he had danced to the best music, dined at the finest tables, drunk the choicest wine. From 1804 to 1805, on the frontier and beyond, he spent on the frontier. His daily conversational fare had been about immediate practical problems, mostly with enlisted men who had little of any, if any, formal education. With Clark, he could discuss scientific matters, natural history, geography, and other subjects, but Clark was more of a Kentuckian than a Virginian, more of a frontier soldier than a polished member of the president's staff. Even with Clark, the flow of the talk had its limits. Later on, Stephen Ambrose gets into some of the things that started to stress the party and some of the things that they were struggling with. And keep in mind that these folks were keeping daily logs of what they were doing to try and document their trip so that when they returned, they could clearly spell out, you know, how far they went, what they did, who they were with, who they encountered, what they encountered, everything from bears to Indians to mountain lions and, you know, rapids, whatever it might have been. Well, what happened that was interesting is summarized in about these two paragraphs. Later on, Stephen Ambrose says that Fort Clatsop was almost more of a prison than a fortification. The men not out hunting spent their days at hard labor, scraping elk hides and making moccasins, 10 per man for the return trip. Keeping the fire going in the smokehouse, a difficult at best, because the timber was wet and only smoldered instead of smoking properly, and carrying out other tasks that they regarded as women's work and resented or even hated. Lewis supervised the work. He made no recorded excursion at the fort. His boredom is evident in some of his journal entries. February 2, 1806. Not any occurrence today worthy of justice, but all are pleased that 1 month of the time which has binds us to Fort Clatsop and which separates us from our friends has now elapsed. The next entry was a month later, March 3, 1806. Everything moves on in the old way, and we are counting the days which separate us from the 1st of April, the scheduled departure date, and which binds us to Fort Clatsop. One of the things that I thought was really interesting about this particular adventure and why I wanted to talk about it is because of the intense mental stress that it takes on a person to endure something like cabin fever. And this is, of course, an extreme scenario. But these things still happen today. In fact, I know of one point in my own recent past where we were snowed in from a snowstorm, and within a day or two, we were starting to go stir crazy. I mean, there's only so much you can do in the confines of a house or a room or a certain location. And sometimes The idea of being out in the middle of nowhere, away from civilization, hiding out in a cabin in the woods, there's a point where it reaches a dream state as some sort of, when you are...
I don't know, am I muted?
When it's not really realistic. It's an ideal, you know, something that doesn't really exist. And sometimes people don't realize what kind of problems can arise when you're actually snowed in or isolated or kept away from the things that would normally engage your mindset. So why does this matter when it comes to prepping? Well, sometimes the darkest times are the moments when we need to press through to see our way out and to have hope for a brighter future. I read a quote actually on a chairback not too long ago the other day that said essentially that the point when you feel like you can't go any further is the moment where you need to push harder. And, you know, this idea of maintaining a strong mental mindset is one that will be your greatest defense against cabin fever. So on today's show, Colin and I are going to be getting into some of the dangers of cabin fever and how you can be prepared to fend it off. But first, before we go into lockdown mode, Colin, would you like to share your fun fact of the week?
Yo, 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 fellow listeners. I'm the co-host of the Next Generation Show, Colin Buford, speaking with my father and the host of the show, Ryan. And today, talking about the horrible, dreaded thought of cabin fever, or for some of you, winter in general. But before we get too far into that, I'd like to quickly cover the Craft Colin Fun Fact of the Week. For those of you who aren't aware of the Craft Colin Fun Fact of the Week, it's a segment on our show that gives you a fun tidbit of information of something that's usually related to the show topic. Some of you might have already known, and some of you might have had no clue. So, without any further ado, let's get right into it. Today's Craft Colin Fun Fact of the Week is... The Earth is closest to the sun in the winter. I didn't know this, personally. But, so, I just thought it was pretty cool. But, yeah. The Earth is closest to the sun in the northern hemisphere during the winter. Around January 3rd, the Earth reaches perihelion, and the Earth is 3.1 million miles closer to the sun than at aphelion. I don't really know how to pronounce these big scientific words, but basically, the sun is much closer to the sun. I mean, the Earth is much closer to the sun in the winter.
Very cool. It's kind of hard to think that that's actually the case when it's actually colder in the wintertime. So, well, that's great. Well, thanks, buddy, for sharing that. And on that note, why don't we unwrap some of the layers of this complex topic? Melinda Lee in chat, great way to segue into this. Melinda Lee mentions that there are people that have a solitary personality and cabin fever would not be a problem for them. For example, Dick Pronecki, the man who built a cabin in Alaska and seldom had human contact. And while that is possible, I mean, you've got folks like Henry David Thoreau or, like this gentleman, Dick Pronecki. I'm not familiar with who he is, but... You know, there's certain folks out there who could really handle being alone for long periods of time. And in fact, a lot of the mountain men spent the majority of their time in the mountains for that reason. But with modern day technology and relationships and connections, our usual social activities have made it much more of a rare form of malady, I guess. So, but it is there. I mean, it doesn't go away just because we have a greater ability to connect to each other. If anything, it probably comes even more at even more of a risk because some folks who are used to having so much stimulation from other people or devices or social media or, you know, even online gaming or whatever it may be, if there's a circumstance where those things are shut off or cut off or limited or isolated or unable to provide whatever that stimulation was, you're going to have a lot of people who are quickly going right back down the other way. So, and they're going to, you know, be suffering from some of these things related to cabin fever. So cabin fever is, you know, it's this time of year, it generally happens a little bit more. Winter weather, sometimes there's also temperature inversions that will do this. Lack of daylight, whenever you actually have, like right now, this time of year, you know, we're only a couple of days from the winter solstice, which is the shortest day of the year. Temperature inversions will actually create a severe cloud cover that, you know, you'll have so much gray sky that it's actually pretty depressing. And that's one of the problems that the Core of Discovery had was, you know, when it was overcast and raining day in and day out, they had no exposure to daylight, you know, just natural light that they were able to, you know, get out and feed off of. Well, some of the symptoms of cabin fever are, which is also known as winter depression, has to do with restlessness, irritability, paranoia sometimes. A lot of times you can have an irrational frustration with everyday objects or everyday people, you know, someone that you're around normally. Bouts of laughter that don't seem to really have any sort of connection to anything. Excessive sleeping during the day, or even sleeplessness where you can't rest at night. So there's obviously something going on with your circadian rhythm, and distrust of anyone around kind of ties back into the paranoia aspect. And also there's an urge to go outside despite foul weather. So there's essentially what cabin fever is, in a nutshell, is when people are cooped up for so long that they have no way to retain any sort of activity or to enjoy some of that social contact that they would before, kind of like was mentioned with the Lewis and Clark expedition. Well, there are some ways of fighting it, and some of them have already percolated in the chat room a little bit. So we're going to focus less on some of the symptoms. One thing I did want to mention is that if you are feeling signs of depression, winter depression tends to come and go. But if you have a real problem, then I urge you to see a medical professional. This advice that I'm going to be giving, or these methods for fighting winter depression, may not be enough to handle hardcore diagnosable depression that some folks have. So keep that in mind. Melinda Lee in the chat again. If she was in a tiny house, she'd have a problem, and so does Colin. You know, it's kind of thing. Being able to get out there and spread your arms and get outside and do some activity, or having room within a house, it would be, you know, it's best. You know, rewind to 1806, and these guys were building a cabin essentially for, you know, a dozen guys who were all sharing quarters and stuck together essentially for 3 months in something that was probably smaller than a hotel room. For any of you out there who have the opportunity to go, I highly recommend it, because it's not the same as me telling you what it is as if you physically stand in the spaces that they were in. So, methods for fighting. I guess probably the first one to start off with, since we've already touched on it a little bit, would be socialization. Some of the best ways that you can reconnect is... is by reconnecting with family and friends. A lot of times with the holidays, it makes it easy to do that. The danger is after the holidays, people tend to drop off. But if you take the time to make a phone call or write a letter or an email to someone who you haven't talked to in a while, it definitely helps to rekindle some of those connections that you had. So, you know, falling back on other forms of communication to where you're actually seeing someone or talking to them in a form other than a text message, and having a real content with your conversation will help tremendously. Another way to do this is hosting a get-together. Something, I mean, obviously holidays are pretty stressful and you have a lot of family around, but this is more geared toward having a get-together with your friends or your family after the holidays. After all the stress is gone and there is no, I mean, you kind of just have people within your circle meet, you know, go out, get outside and be with people, whether you're going on a walk or something like that. And that kind of leads into the next portion, the next method for fighting cabin fever, which is making an environmental change. Now, like has been mentioned in the chat room, there was some conversation about, you know, how much space you have and, you know, how walls can tend to close in on you if you feel, you know, like you're trapped, essentially. Well, one of the ways to get out of that funk is to change the furniture or your the layout of your rooms. This is something that I found to be extremely helpful for a very long time. And I would notice that in the wintertime, I tended to change out the furniture situation 2-3 times during the winter. And it helped enough to change the environment within the walls that I was confined to, whether it was an apartment or, you know, a house or, I mean, whatever environment I was in, even if I was visiting somewhere or whatever, if I had a roommate or if I was living on my own, changing the furniture makes a big difference in how you can perceive what's going on around you and, you know, your ability to just kind of have a little bit more variety, I guess you could say, in your space. Another option you can take on is painting. Painting walls or doing minor home improvements. And that alone will be enough sometimes to create a physical lasting change within your environment that can offset, you know, just the lack of color that tends to come around when you all you have to look at outside are gray skies and white walls and sometimes even, you know, black skies outdoors when you're waking up in the morning at dark and getting home at dark. So another environmental change that's a good one to go with is, taking a hike or a walk. And this kind of bleeds into two. Obviously, you're doing an environmental change by stepping outside of the house and, you know, getting outside. But it also brings up the third point or the third method for fighting cabin fever, which is to get exercise. Now, a lot of you out there who like to go to the gym, you know, obviously that's going to kill two birds with one stone. You know, if you can get out to the gym, get yourself a good workout. I know Pappy, he's rocking it in the gym these days, in the chat room. There's also, you know, you kind of are around people as well. So there's a little bit of socialization. Well, if you're able to, if you don't have the ability to get out to a gym, you're kind of stuck, you know, between a rock and a hard place because a lot of people just don't have the space to be able to have a workout equipment set up or a workout room in their house. Well, if you don't have a whole lot of room, some things you can do are take on, get an indoor pull-up bar. And those basically, there's a couple different styles. You can mount them physically to the door frame by screwing the brackets in and then extending out the bar, and it's kind of like a shower bar that sets in place. Another one is if you have the kind that actually just uses leverage to where it sets, like if you're in an apartment, you obviously won't be able to put a bunch of screws in the walls, but if you take one of these, you can actually put your bars up and you'd have to lift your knees, but you can do regular pull-ups just by being able to have one of these pull-up bars that mounts to the face of the wall, and it's held by basically by your own weight. Another option is you can I have on my list is having tie-down straps on hand. Like, yep, Pappy nailed it. TRX is a great home workout system. You can do a lot with tie-down straps or P90X, I think it is, P90 workout bands. You can get these relatively inexpensively, or what are the, not like medicine balls, things like that. You can keep within one duffel bag an entire gym worth of weight training and exercise equipment. You know, another thing, if you like, one of the things that I do on occasion is indoor soccer agility training. So if you, there's plenty of videos online, and if you look into indoor soccer, they actually have a different type of ball. It's like a yellow, well, the one that I have was yellow, and it had kind of a felt material on the outside of it. And you can do a lot of footwork and agility training tools or skill building, whether you play soccer or not, just to be able to get some movement in as if you were able to get outside and do something. And, you know, I guess, so for me personally, one of the things, one of my favorite ways to get exercise is my dogs. Whether I'm walking them or wrestling with them or training with them, you know, that you can do a lot with a dog. And one of the things that was mentioned was to be able to bring pets into your life, because they tend to have the ability to, you know, reduce a lot of that stress. And lastly, on the exercise on my part, we actually burn wood through the winter. So one of the things that we do, or that I tend to do, is I save some of my wood cutting chores for the first of the year. And I do this because I can get outside and get some real normal exercise and get some work done. But it's enough of a workout to where I can go outside, get some fresh air, and I'm doing enough to stay warm, and I'm moving enough to stay active and get some blood flowing. So it's, for those of you who do a lot of CrossFit with the hammers and the giant tractor tires, it's probably very similar to that if you're not familiar with chopping wood. But I can say it's a lot more rewarding on my own part. So we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to finish up a couple more methods for deterring cabin fever, and we'll take on the pint-sized prepper project of the week. So hold on 1 minute, and we'll give some airtime to our sponsors.
Hi, Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio. Imagine this, if you will. A complete collapse has occurred and martial law has been declared. Introducing the good game. You must escape the city and get back to your cabin, so pack your gear and grab your gun. It's time to get out of Dodge. The game comes with a board, your map, and gear card, which you must use to negotiate the obstacles you encounter on your way to safety. You might need more here or more there. You decide. Bad weather, hungry animals, and bad guys are going to get in your way. You've got to be ready for them. Made by Preppers for Preppers, a board game of survival by Killswitch Bunker Games, available now at Amazon.com, or find us on Facebook, Killswitch Bunker. Bunker Games.
The ultimate wood-burning, collapsible survival and camping stove just got better. Designed for the prepper, survivalist, or weekend adventurer, the Under 6 Elite and the new Under 2.2 Elite Survival Stoves by SurvivalStoveWorks.com can cook meals in under 6 minutes. Cook your meals with just a few twigs and sticks, and without all the smoke and black soot. The Under 6 Elite weighs under 6 pounds, weighing even less than the new 2.2 Elite. Each of these high-quality survival stoves can be assembled in under a minute. Made right here in the USA, these stoves, even with all the extras, are still easy to store and transport in their own carrying cases. On sale now, with free shipping. Watch the videos, see both in action. Then, get yours now at SurvivalStoveWorks.com. SurvivalStoveWorks.com.
As Prepper Broadcasting listeners, you already know that the more self-reliant people we have around, the better off we'll be in a disaster. That's why we started Prepper.org. The mission? Bring top survival, prepping, and homesteading experts under one roof to share their knowledge with as many Americans as possible. I want you to go to Prepper.org/PBN. we've got a free survival basics guide for you by the one and only Ron Foster. That's prepper.org/PBN. Prepper.org/PBN.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking around. Great sponsors, great shows, great audience. And don't forget to keep our sponsors in mind on your path toward preparedness. You can check out some of those Kill Switch Bunker games, you know, for your own ability to stay out of the throes of cabin fever. And it's probably a good way to segue into the next portion, which is, you know, what we've been talking about with what you can do to fend off cabin fever. One of the things that I found most effective, and I've kind of confirmed it online, a lot of this is common sense, but one of the ways you can to fend off cabin fever is to engage your brain, you know, stimulation. One of the best ways to do that is to escape through a book. If you have stuff loaded up on a Kindle, it's probably a good way to escape long enough for a couple hours a day, or, you know, enough to at least get you out of your mind being tough, or, you know, being, you know, holed up in a small house or an apartment or something like that. And I would encourage you to hold off on video games. It's really easy to lose track of time in video games. But as addictive as they are, if they're not accessible, you're better off to do interactive games within your own home. Card games, dice games, things like the Kill Switch Bunker games, and things like that. You know, try and get out there and break out the board games, and remember that they're there for a reason. They've been.
What about,
you know,
what about like other games, like not board games or dice games, but things that kids might play, like tag and hide and seek and stuff? Or are you talking specifically like dice games and stuff?
Oh yeah, no, I mean interaction, anything that you could do to engage yourself or multiple people to try and get out of that rut of feeling trapped. In fact, that kind of takes me to the next one, actually, is like by working on something, having a small project. And Melinda Lee talked about this earlier in chat, about having a bunch of projects that that she's trying out, like making mead, kombucha, crocheting, cooking new recipes. But when it comes to kids, one of the best things I read on this topic was building something, build a fort. You know, make the biggest fort you possibly can. And I mean, talk about changing out your layout of your furniture. Take a weekend and get the bed sheets out and have a good time. Taking on new projects. And one of the things that I like to do is plan for when summer comes, going through and planning your gardening setup, how you want to lay it out, you know, and taking an inventory. You know, this obviously is something that can be done anytime, but it's essential in the wintertime. You can take an inventory of your food stores, your garden planting, your seeds, and how you're doing in that area, your winter gear, and I don't know, what other kind of things would you want to take an inventory of, bud?
As far as like winter goes, or like preparing for things like cabin fever?
Well, just like taking like inventory, yeah.
So what did you list?
Like, that's all right. Like foods, food and water stores, garden materials and supplies, and like winter gear.
All right. Well, you said garden supplies. What about like collapsible or helpful tools that you might use? Like, you know, those shovels that you can like twist on the end and then fold up and you can like put them in bags.
Oh, yeah. Like changing out what tools you already have and checking them out. Yeah. So.
Yeah, or I don't know, something like that, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, another, by taking on some of these projects and doing some of these kind of things, it'll also introduce you to some of the other ways that you can be more involved with, you know, changing out your scenery or changing out your activities. And the best way to do this is kind of like Melinda Lee mentioned, by cooking new recipes. Your diet when you are isolated is extremely important, especially in winter months. You need to have more vitamin D. The vitamin D, some of you may already know this, but it doesn't occur naturally in food. The only way to get it naturally is from the sun. Well, when the sun is down when you wake up to go to work in the morning, and you're inside all day, and then you leave work and it's down again until you get home, you don't have hardly any time physically to absorb any vitamin D from the sun. So some of the things you can do is supplement your diet with foods or vitamins, gums or chews or something like that, that contain vitamin D. Milk is an option. Milk is often fortified with vitamin D because it helps with calcium absorption. But a lot of, and when you think of milk, you're thinking more of, you know, I want to get my calcium. But there is an added benefit if you get vitamin D milk. And sometimes that might mean you have to drink a different type of milk or something, but it's one way to get that in, that vitamin in your system. Another way is through tuna. While you're out there trying out some new recipes, you can check out different forms of maybe casseroles or like fish tacos or tuna or salmon patties. You can even mix it with a cream cheese spread, something like that. Some way of getting more variety into your diet will help tremendously. And this is something that the Lewis and Clark expedition ran into, because at first when they got to Fort Clatsop, there was all sorts of elk. They were able to hunt deer and elk, you know, for weeks on end and bring home, you know, several head of elk on a regular basis without fail. The problem was that that's all that they were eating. And at the end of 3 months of eating nothing but elk, they really had no desire to eat any more of it. And they knew that whatever they were eating that they didn't eat, they were preserving for the return trip home. So taking on some different things in your diet, especially when it comes to certain foods that contain vitamin D, it will help. If you don't have access to those foods, or if you have allergies or something, another way is to, like I mentioned before, get some vitamins. You can either get, you know, vitamin chewables or gummies or whatever. And it doesn't hurt anything to have more vitamin D. You can actually, you know, give it to your kids as part of their breakfast. And I remember when I was a kid growing up, we had a set of vitamins that we would generally eat around wintertime for that reason. It just helped maintain that balance and keep us from getting those winter blues. So, and then I think lastly, before we go on to the prepper project of the week, one of the things that I came across that I found was kind of an oddball way of fighting cabin fever, but it actually makes a lot of sense, is paying close attention to your personal hygiene. And you may not think this is a very big deal, but it's actually, I mean, especially if you're in the company of others, it does something to help you. I don't know how to put this properly, but it does something to help your mood. And they've actually done studies to show that standing in front of a mirror for a certain amount of time will actually improve your mood. And by just taking note of your own personal hygiene, you'll wind up naturally standing in front of a mirror, but also you'll have a little bit more self-respect and you'll vest a little bit more in yourself, rather than going the other way and kind of going internal and not shaving, not combing your hair, not brushing your teeth, not showering, that kind of stuff. And
doing all that stuff, though, I mean, like, not doing all that stuff will make you uncomfortable, too.
Oh, yeah, it'll make you uncomfortable and make you sick.
Trapped inside, yeah, that too.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that happens with cabin fever is you know, you tend to back away. You tend to just want to not do anything or be around anybody, or you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to do anything. You just want to hole up and just sit and be alone. And
it's this time of year where
one of the worst things you can do. So taking time
and,
go ahead.
Well, it's this time of year that people are inside with other people. I mean, really, they're trapped in like this dome of this sickness and germs and stuff. So it's better to stay clean and sanitary and stuff like that.
Exactly. So with that, hopefully you folks can keep that in mind when it comes to your own sanity over the next few months. Right now, we're kind of in the low point, but until we start cresting back upward into spring, you'll really want to pay attention to the goings on. So let's go ahead and switch gears and we'll have a little bit of time for the Pint-Sized Prepper Project of the Week. Now, we were kind of thinking, well, how do we, what's the best way to debunk cabin fever? And, you know, obviously we talked about some diet and rearranging and exercise, but we thought the best way to demonstrate this is to build a survival kit for your camping bag, your junk drawer, your glove box, or your lights out kits or bug in kits. And I'll go ahead and drop a link to the Facebook page in chat. And it's up on Instagram as well for those of you who've already seen it or who haven't seen it. Subscribe to us on or follow us on Instagram, I guess, and you can check that out. I'll go ahead and drop the link in chat. Colin, do you want to try and describe kind of how this works and what goes into it?
Sure, yeah. Well, also, too, I just want to say this. Last time, toward the end of the show, I figured out that on the actual post, if you go online to the Instagram, you can put that in the chat, too, and they can see it right there.
Oh, sweet.
But,
maybe I'll try and do it.
But, yeah, so it seems, I mean, it looks pretty cool. You got, like, Yahtzee and a writing pencil. Some playing cards, a couple different patterns of paracord, as well as paper clips, band-aids, and a pocket. What is that? A pocket dictionary?
It's a sharpening stone, yep.
Oh, it's a sharpening stone. All right.
Yeah.
That looks like a book. All right. Well, yeah, I mean,
so
you got five dice, and really all you would need is a stick of gum, and then you could pull off a MacGyver and maybe make a bomb or something.
Well, I don't know if we're going to go that far quite yet. So essentially what you do is you locate a small container. Keep it small because you don't want to try and pack more into this than works. I mean, the idea is you want to be able to grab it and have it available. Just tuck it away when you don't need it, but know exactly where it's at. We used a Crown Royal bag because to me, that bag is so easily identifiable to so many people that, you know, you could easily say, go find the, the Crown Royal bag or the purple bag. And you can generally, most people will find it or they'll know what you're looking for. So you locate some sort of small container. A cloth bag works fine, but you could, if you want to go into a tin or box or whatever, you can. And then you want to build your list and collect the gear. Now, we put about five dice in so that at least someone could play Yahtzee. There's a whole number of dice games out there, but the idea of having dice around helps for, you know, keeping scores or doing things that you would normally use a pencil for. So, if you're not actively using the dice, you can use them for other games. And the other thing we added in, like Pappy says in the chat room, was a pack of survival playing cards. We just put a regular deck of cards in there, but it's a good idea if you're going to put a deck of cards in to also print out a couple of instructions for the types of games that you might be playing. That way you have a set of rules that can be followed and you wouldn't necessarily need to make them up. So like you can go like whether you're playing war or solitaire or I don't know, what's poker or, you know, whatever it may be, because there's hundreds of card games out there. But if you're not, you know, if you have the ability to try variations of these, it'll make the cards that much more valuable. I also put in there, like a small pen or pencil, about the size of that you might get from a golf course, are perfect. And a lot of times those have erasers on them and they're free. So if you ever get a chance to hit a golf course and you're doing whatever, you know, checking it out to see what their green fees are, you grab a couple pencils and you're good to go. I also put a small pad of paper in there, just a small spiral notebook paper. And the one that I use is, it's called Write in the Rain, which is a water resistant kind, to where you can write on it even if it's wet with a pencil or a pen. And the reason why I like this, obviously, is because of the water resistance, the water repellency of it, but and it's small, but this particular one has a grid pattern on it. So you can actually use it to create diagrams, and you can use those grids to make other games like Go or Tic-Tac-Toe or Sudoku or things like that. So within a notepad, you can actually have games that aren't created, but you can build yourself, just because of the way the lines are structured. Now, we also put some paracord in there, and the book that Colin mentioned was the Thomas Glover Pocket Ref Manual, Pocket Reference. And I put that in there because it's got a lot of interesting facts and figures, and scales and dimensions, but it's also got some basic knots that you can do. And between that and the paracord, you can develop your own skill sets while you're hanging out, working with your hands. And then one of the other things that we tend to do, when it, you know, especially when there's not a whole lot to do, if you're out camping or hiking, or if you're just sitting by the fire, is I like to whittle. But whittling does require a very sharp knife, and it tends to wear down your knives pretty consistently. So if you have a small sharpening stone within this kit, then your everyday carry has a little bit more added value to it. So some of the other alternative things that you might consider putting in a kit like this might be like some of those elastic bands that we talked about, because they can compress to almost nothing, and you can throw them in there and be able to work out within and have that package available right with your own, you know, what do you call it? So it's not really an EDC kit. It's kind of like a cabin fever survival kit, I guess you could say. Another thing that you might consider taking on is like a voice recorder. Like if you have a digital voice recorder, they're super cheap and they're easy to come by. You can actually find them at thrift stores pretty easily because nobody uses them very much anymore. But if you have a couple of batteries and a voice recorder, you can actually make a mental note of the way you're feeling and what's going on and what you observed that day, and continue to do that, especially if you're in a long-term scenario where you'll be without or away from people for a long time. It will actually help your sanity quite a bit. Let's see, I think the one other thing that I had in there was, you know, those tie-down straps, things like that, and vitamin D pills. If you have packets of vitamin D pills, or if you have Mylar bags, you can cut your own and put a couple of pills from your vitamin D container and put them into that bag. You know, you can imagine you can probably fit a half a dozen in there, which would carry you through, you know, at least a week of being isolated, if that's what it come down to. So, lots of conversation in the chat. Thanks for everybody for your contribution. It looks like, you know, there's a lot of folks in there who are chiming in about board games and having cabinets full of games. And really, that's it's a great way to interact with people outside of, you know, the Netflix and social media and everything else. So, and I hope you guys like this particular project. It's a kid-friendly way to spark and encourage initiative when it comes to doing, you know, engaging and interacting with other people in close quarters. It shows the importance of team activity or even solo activities for mental strength and training, or even strength training. So, and lastly, it brings light to the severity of cabin fever and what steps you can take to prevent it and how easy some of these steps are. So with that, for the final takeaway, I just wanted to get across that cabin fever is a lesser known depression that's often neglected, but it can sometimes cause psychological harm. It can come in a week or it can come in a few days. And in extreme cases, it has spawned violence, rage, or paranoia. It happens every year, and it affects more than it does others, some more than others. But by keeping a few preparations in mind, you can have a defense against this dark turn of the season. We are on the brink of the shortest day of the year, the longest night. The winter solstice is only a few days away, and the next few months we will be coming out of the dark days of winter. But to come out ahead, you will be much better off by taking note of your own mental state. And if you feel off, or if you notice your kids with pent-up energy, or you find yourself being short with your family or your spouse, take a few moments to step back and assess the situation. Instead of pulling away into further isolation, take the opportunity to channel your energy into some form of activity. Even in isolation, there is an opportunity for strength. Lastly, in case you missed it, on last week's show, we did a special on preparing for family conflict, where we shared some of our own experiences with dealing with family conflict, holiday stress, and pulling through when loved ones are gone or unavailable. Remember, if you missed out on any of the shows, you can always check out our previous episodes on the show page or on your favorite network streaming service. And while you're there, be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We've got a lot of changes going on at Prepper Broadcasting, so we hope that you folks out there who have been longtime listeners take a few minutes to leave us a good review and draw some new listeners. And next week, it's probably going to be up in the air. I've got some family members in town, so we might try and bring them on and talk about what it's like being home for the holidays and prepping for that sort of thing, or the return trip. So with that, you know, I think that's it for today, everyone. Thanks for joining us on the Next Generation Show, and don't forget to tune in next Sunday where we explore another aspect of the little things in life that make all the difference in the world. This is your host, Ryan Buford, and your co-host,
Colin Buford,
reminding you to stay informed, get involved, and be prepared. Have a great night, everybody, and make it a great week.
Today's broadcast has come to you through the courtesy of the Prepper Broadcasting Network. See our hosts, show schedules, archive programs, and more at PrepperBroadcasting.com. Thanks for listening.
Disaster strikes and your GPS is useless, ancient navigation techniques will ensure your survival. New from Ulysses Press, Prepper's Survival Navigation. With this guide, you can easily travel through even the farthest, remotest places, utilizing tips from the United States Army and lifelong wilderness experts. You'll learn life-saving navigation techniques. This definitive guide to terrain navigation also teaches you essential survival skills like firecraft, water procurement, and shelter making. Prepper's survival navigation is essential to have on hand during any outdoor adventure, including the weekend family outing. On sale now. Find Prepper's survival navigation on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Prepper Broadcasting, or wherever fine books are sold.